The Mike Missinelli Show.
Turn your radios up. Mike's ready to rock.
Good afternoon, everybody. Mike Missinelli Show on the air. Right here on 97.5 The Fanatic. And when there's a Sixer game, we always react. And so we will react to the Sixers game. I have a question. It's like a fill-in-the-blanks question for Sixer fans and people who follow the NBA. There's also the Baseball Hall of Fame is going to be voted on. Well, we will know during the show, Tyrone.
It'll be official at 6, but they're what they've been doing throughout the process. The tracker's been releasing it. So we'll know, most likely, before the end of the show, who's in and who's out.
We will know, and the two most intriguing candidates for entry, for me, Barry Bonds, whether he gets in, and also Curt Schilling, and it looks like both of them are going to get in by the tracking numbers.
Based on the tracking numbers. Now, we don't know where the votes are. They new school, old school votes that haven't been tracked yet, but they're both trending in the right direction.
Yes, and we will have Jason Stark on at 4:30 to explain his voting and whether we'll discuss how it comes out. As you know, you can probably guess where I stand. I think Bonds belongs. I would never in a million years vote for Curt Schilling. And I think it was the responsibility of baseball writers to react accordingly and do our part in this day and age where we are supposedly more aware of things that tear down society instead of enhance them. I think it was the responsibility of those baseball writers to use their power to put that example forth. But it looks like they're all going to be cowardly and they're going to hide behind the excuse.
Yeah, but his performance makes him belong in the Hall of Fame.
All right. Well, we'll see. Yeah, it makes me nuts. But let's move on. We have still some Eagles stuff to talk about, and the staff being filled out, and there's a prediction on how the draft is going to be laid out here by Mel Kiper. He's got his mock draft out today. We'll comment on that because he's got the Eagles sitting there at 6, and taking a guy, the second guy from Alabama, Jaylen Waddle. Passing up on Justin Fields, who by this mock draft will be available to them, which would be an interesting conversation, and we'll talk about that. So let's get back to the Sixers. And here's the fill-in-the-blanks question. The Sixers do not win without Joel Embiid because... Well, let's throw it out there. I want you to think about filling in the blanks. Why don't the Sixers win without Joel Embiid? Why do they struggle so much on the road, even when Embiid's in the lineup? But I'd love to hear your, I have a pretty clear defined answer on this, but I don't want to give you my answer. I just want to kind of hear you guys fill in the blanks. And so we'll do that with our own staff right after we do this.
Hello. 97.5 The Fanatics FU Money. Your chance to win $500 right now.
Yeah, I was very conscious of it today. Very conscious.
Very good.
I actually, after 35 years, just turned into a radio man. It's 97.5's The Fanatic FU Money. Your chance to win $500 from us, for you, Fanatic users. Treat the word great. Text the word great. I'm sorry. Text the word great. GREAT to 45911. Or enter it on the 97.5 The Fanatic app. Or 975thefanatic.com. That's the word great. One winner selected at random will win $500. Everyone that enters on the app or website be qualified for a $10,000 grand prize. You can get complete rules for this company-wide contest on our website, 975thefanatic.com. It is all being presented by Adam Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Is your furnace useless? Get an upgrade because you can get 0% financing for 6 years right now on an HVAC system from Adam Mechanical. All right, Tyrone, I'm going to go to you. You fresh off of Sixers Outsider. You were the last word on the game last night.
Yeah.
And so as we go into this game, they lose to the Detroit Pistons. Here's what I'll tell you right away. I don't get carried away about a regular season game, and I don't care that Embiid didn't play last night. Because I know these games are meaningless. And what I'm trying to do is just kind of establish some kind of an analysis here. Even though I don't think that it was that detrimental that they lost a regular season game to the Pistons last night. So here the question outside of that is, The Sixers, without Joel Embiid, the Sixers lose because?
Because so far this year, Ben Simmons is unable to elevate his game enough to help the teammates, to help the role players. So what I mean is that Embiid this year, I'm trying not to talk about anything before this year. Because there has in the past where Simmons has played well without Embiid. This year, not so much. This year, Embiid elevates his teammates because he's become better passing out of the double. He's drawn a lot of attention, the whole gravity term. And then the lesser guys are getting easier looks and they're able to convert those easier looks because they're easier looks. Very simple. Simmons this year, for whatever reason, cannot, without Embiid, cannot elevate guys. And we know he doesn't go out there and score it himself. So until he elevates himself to help the lesser players, the Currys, the Greens, the Korkmazes, the Shakes, etc., that's what's going to happen. So I don't want to blame, again, it's regular season game. That doesn't mean he won't elevate, but to this point, he hasn't elevated his game enough to help the lesser players, and those guys all go cold when Embiid's out.
Natalie?
Yeah, it's disappointing because this is exactly what the problem is. And like you've been saying, how are they supposed to be transformative? Ben can't step up to the plate unless you. How are we ever going to win a championship if it's all on Joel? It doesn't make sense. And it's just going to keep happening.
Well, listen, Joel is going to be there. So if he's not there, they don't have a chance to win anyway. But that's just, is it possible that he could carry them? Yeah, it's possible. I think that what we've been looking at the Sixers is the question is, do they have enough all around? And part of them having enough all around is to have guys also support what Joel Embiid is doing. And when you look at it, they're nice players, but they're not enough. The Greens of the world, the Seth Currys of the world. And so it's and the Tobias, who stepped up last night, but obviously it's not enough. And he's probably not going to be enough to make up that difference. So it all comes down to the second star on the team. And this is why I go, the enablement has to stop. And I see it all over the place. People want to protect Ben Simmons. The coaching staff, I don't know what they're doing, but it seems like everybody is so conscious of protecting his feelings that nothing's going to change. And again, I don't want to overreact to a one game that they lost against the Pistons, but I think that we kind of get the message of what's up here.
Well, and that's what I mean. It's one game last night, and then it's going to be another game, you know, maybe in a week or two when he needs load management, when Joel needs the night off for back tightness or whatever the situation is. But those games are going to add up, and that's the biggest hole in the offense.
Yeah. And then he got swatted in the head by Josh Jackson last night. And then Josh Jackson called him the B word, Tyrone.
Yeah, that was over the line, Josh. Like, that was over the line. I'm glad they called the flagrant. But I thought somebody should have had Ben's back.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mike Scott tried to have it.
But he's not even playing. No, a guy who's active. No, somebody has to know their role. Like, hey Tony Bradley. You just gonna watch that happen, Brad? Like, you know where somebody on the pecking order has to know where they lie, and you gotta kind of come on, Tony Bradley. Somebody to me had to have his back.
I agree 100%. And so they limped out of there last night.
Yeah, I didn't care for that.
And then Doc did wave the white flag at the end, 4+, maybe like 420 something.
Yeah, down 14.
And he's seen enough. And he goes, you know what? Sometimes you gotta know how to lose, but also here's a message. Fellas, sit down. So I thought that was good.
Yeah, after the game, he said something similar to what you said. He said, listen, I'm not going to overreact to a regular season game. He goes, but this is a winnable game, and we have to be better. He says, I expect we will be. He didn't panic, but he said it pretty clearly. Like, games like this, we were supposed to win even without Embiid.
And I think it was good that he read his team. You know what? Their heart's not in this game. They even attempt me to come back for 14 here, which normally in the NBA you can come back from. So there you go.
Yeah, gave the go. And then what that did do is, I might have been a bit of a slump breaker for Maxey, who had been in a slump. Sometimes that stuff carries over. Maybe against the Lakers, he ends up giving you a little something off the bench because he got hot in that fourth quarter. That we've seen, that's not the craziest thing. We've seen guys get hot and late in garbage time, and it carry over once you start seeing the ball go through, because he had been in his really his first career slump.
Yeah. And they got beat last night by a team that one guy, Wayne Ellington, is still trying his best to play out there. Still can stroke it, right? And the opposite of Wayne Ellington is, to me, right now, the biggest thief in the league. And in his honor, Blake Griffin, I've assembled an all-thief team currently.
An all-thief team?
Yeah, an all-thief in the NBA team.
Okay.
By position, too. I think I got all positions covered.
Oh, wow.
Because he's king thief, that dude. Man. Blake Griffin makes $36.8 million going through the motions that he goes through these days.
Pushing, not even trying to play defense. He's just shouldering people, bodying people. He's like a goon in hockey anymore.
He really
making $36 million.
What a stiff. Man, I can't imagine what the fans in Detroit think of that dude.
It's
stealing money every night.
Untradeable, too. No one will take it.
And then he plays out these little personal beefs. Like the Kendall beef was in there last night, right?
Yeah, because if you follow the lineage, and people caught on. So it went, at the time, it did go from Blake to Ben and then to Devin Booker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those are all Kendall's choices. She's a GOAT woman, and I applaud her.
Yeah.
But it seemed like Blake was still more angry about it than Ben.
Yeah.
Last night. Like, yeah, he was a little
like
bit.
Blake was playing personal games.
Yeah, like mad about it. Like, you stole my girl, who then isn't even with you anymore. But it seemed like Blake was still.
He's still bitter about
still
it.
Still bitter, wants that old thing back.
Yeah.
Come on, Blake. You're a rich man.
You got to see the pattern here.
Yeah, the Booker's not forever, buddy. Like, if the Booker's not forever, if you want another shot, you just wait out Booker.
And
you got to wait it out. Get back in line.
What a bandit. That Blake Griffin is 610-632-0975 is how you get in. It's the Mike Mastinelli Show. Jason Stark, I'm going to tell you right now, I disagree with Jason. That I love him. He's a good buddy of mine. I hope I can hold my composure when I have Jason on with his rationale of why he would vote for Curt Schilling. We're back after this on 97.5 The Fanatic.
The Mike Mastinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
Let's talk some baseball issues. Some heated baseball issues, too. Not only just player and team-wise, but he got Hall of Fame issues right here. And who better to talk to those about than a man who is in the Hall of Fame, who is a world-class, world-renowned baseball writer and chronicler. And he is, of course, a buddy. His name is Jason Stark. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline. Bounce forward. Hello, Jason.
Hey, Mike. Kind of a crazy day, huh?
It is a crazy day. Now, first of all, let me ask you about an update from your viewpoint on who is going to get in at this point. I guess the official announcement comes soon, but what do you think happens here on who gets in and who does not?
I would project that nobody's getting in, Mike.
Really?
The announcement's 6 o'clock tonight, and the only guy who really had a shot ever was our buddy Schilling.
Mm-hmm.
And, more than half the votes have now been made public on the Ryan Thibodeau Hall of Fame vote tracker.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still losing votes. You need to be gaining votes. He needed to gain 20 votes. He's the biggest loser of votes of anybody on the ballot. He's at -3 among returning voters. And that is a grim sign, because when you start thinking about how many no's he's got to flip to yeses among the remaining 49% out there, I don't see how it happens. I mean, it's possible, but it seems really unlikely at this point.
Well, I actually applaud that, because I didn't think that was going to be the case. I thought he was going to get in, and the baseball writers would have shirked their responsibility in this situation. So I'm good with that. Now, It's interesting that these votes started falling off because they started, the voting was done before he actually had that last tweet of January 6th, which bordered on sedition, in my view. So he had already cooked his own goose with the writers who wrote it?
Apparently. And I mean, the significance of that last tweet is you've seen so many voters now in the last couple of weeks say, I would never vote for him again. And we're talking about a number who had found a way to vote for him this time. That I don't see how he gets those votes next year either. And he's like, he's breaking a streak that had gone back, gone by 30 decades. I'm sorry, three decades, 30 years, where every player who reached 70% in that 30 year period, who had time left on the ballot, got elected the next year. Well, he's not going to get elected this year, and he's only got 1 year to go, and you can see already he's going to lose votes next year. He has succeeded in tweeting himself out of the Hall of Fame. That's never happened.
All right, so what do you think of that? The fact that he did get himself voted out of the Hall of Fame. Now, as far as I know, you did vote for him, and you have a reason why you voted for him. And the other side of it to discuss is that that stuff should not be considered, that that his for performance on the field should be considered first and foremost.
Look, I don't have a perfect answer for you. I don't have a foolproof formula for you. Seriously kept me up nights trying to figure out what to do about him, what to do about Omar Vizquel, what to do about my whole ballot. And trying to make sense of the character and integrity clause is impossible, man. It just is. Here's one you should think of in Curt Schilling's case. 2000, 2001, 2004. If Randy Johnson twists his ankle, if Johan Santana tweaks a hamstring, Curt Schilling would have won three Cy Young Awards in those 3 years instead of finishing second. He'd already be in. Would we be throwing him out of the Hall of Fame? So how are we supposed to handle what a guy tweets 13 years after he throws his last pitch? I don't know the answer. I just know how I eventually decided I was going to try to continue to vote on the people that I covered and the careers they had. But I just don't know if that's right or wrong. I just know that's how I voted.
All right. Well, that's fair the way you explain it. Now, like, here's what I say. I think the right result, I think we have reached a point in this day and age where we're supposed to be more enlightened and aware of harmful equality judgments. And mm-hmm. that overpowers anything he would have done on a field. In my view, because you can't ignore it. In the year 2021, you just can't ignore it. It would be it would be delinquent. It wouldn't be patriotic to ignore it, in my view.
Yeah, my long-time stance on this is that it's the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's not the Twitter Hall of Fame. Right? It's not the Hall of Twitter. But has he pushed himself into just totally new territory that we've never dealt with before? Anybody who thinks the answer to that is, yeah, I'd never vote for him, I understand. I get it. As I said, I just don't know the right answer. I would really appreciate it if the Hall of Fame would give us some guidance on stuff like this. Like, they never even let us vote on Pete Rose. All right?
Yeah. It's
a lot easier if you want to take people that you don't want to go into the Hall and ban them from being on the ballot. Do that. It's just too hard to be the morality police. It's really not a good gig.
I get it. It's not a good gig. But look at it this way. I don't know if this would bring you any kind of guidance on it at all. And who am I to give you guidance? But you guys have been anointed as caretakers as such of who's great enough to get in. Part of that is that there is a morals clause that you are supposed to consider. So that's a special power that they have given you as caretakers. Right. And to me, to not utilize that power to do the right thing would be the wrong thing.
And I've thought about this, honestly, many times over the last 2 months, trying to figure out this ballot. And like, the more Curt tweets, the more he forces you to think about it. You and I have talked about this before. You know, if he doesn't get in, he'll blame it on us, and he'll be good with that. But that is sad to me. You know, I lived through induction weekend. I was honored at induction weekend, and it's one of the great times in your life. Kurt Schilling should not be denying himself that, but that's just where he is right now and how he looks at the world. It's sad to me.
I think he wants to be denied. I think he gives him more fuel. He challenges the whole thing. But and he even goes as far as say that all journalists should be lynched. I mean, it's just like he's just daring you guys.
He is, and you and I have argued about this before. I disagree with you that he doesn't want to get in.
Mm-hmm.
I think he does, but if he doesn't, he knows just how he wants to play it.
Yeah,
and that's how. But I really like to just grab him by the shoulders and say, listen, man, you're tweeting yourself out of one of the greatest moments of a lifetime. I mean, there's no greater time in the life of a player like him, of a person who did what he did for a living. This is tragic. What he's doing to himself. And, like, we can't get to him. We can't stop him. He's just too immersed in it.
Yeah, he is. All right, let's talk about the Phillies, because they did sign JT Realmuto, and it's, like, 23 and change, which is where he wanted to go anyway. The Phillies seem reluctant to go there. What broke it?
Well, once the Phillies offered him 5 and whatever it was, 110, whatever that offer was that I reported a week or so ago, that put them in position where nobody was going to outbid them. And I never thought they'd be the team that won the bidding war. But then a couple of things happened. He shot so high. You know, and like I now know, at one time he was looking for $30 million a year.
Oh.
And that, you know, every team that heard that said, no thanks. That's just not going to happen. And they went in a different direction. They spent their money elsewhere until it was just the Phillies. And then the second thing happened. They hired Dave Dombrowski. And once John Middleton hired Dave Dombrowski, then all of a sudden, the budget wasn't written in pen anymore. It was written in pencil. Clearly, Dave was able to convince John Middleton that there was no path to contention if they didn't re-sign this guy. I agree with that. And I'm not that uncomfortable with the amount they spent. What's going to be really interesting now is how much more they have to spend, because you don't do this deal unless you're trying to win. And that's going to be a hard thing to pull off in this division, man.
Yeah, it is. So let me ask you, were the Braves the real threat that forced them to go to this number?
I don't think so.
It wasn't. So they're basically just bidding against themselves?
I think in the end they were. I'm just trying to read this. The Braves, the Mets, and the Nationals all had interest. The Braves had interest on their terms. That was never going to happen. The Nationals had interest, but they just didn't have the payroll structure that enabled them to get to this kind of contract. And the Mets moved on a long time ago when they signed James McCann, and that left the Phillies. And so, you know, I just thinking along with the Phillies on this one, if they lowballed JT and said, we know you got nothing else, was that the way to play it? I think they decided no, that they appreciated the player. They understood it. They understood, I think, just as they did when they offered Bryce Harper $300 million, that's what needed to happen for the player to feel good about taking the money and returning to their team and not being bitter or angry or thinking about dollars that were never actually there, that were in his head. So I think this was as much psychological as it was economic. Don't you?
Yeah. Well, listen, I think it's refreshing for fans to hear that they would do that in light of the fact that All we thought about was them cutting costs and not laying off people, and you know, their budget was going to shrink, and so that's refreshing, and I think it brings the fans back into believing in the organization.
Yeah, I think that was the other part of this that we didn't get to is if what happened if they didn't re-sign him? How is the fan base going to look at their franchise? That would have been a disaster. You know, so you had to do what you had to do. And I honestly think that John Middleton knew that, but I especially think that Dave Dombrowski read that right away and reinforced that.
All right, last question, and this is a very important question. I tried to put together the Phillies 25-man roster with the starting lineup and the whole bit. So, and my starting lineup has Odubel Herrera as the center fielder. Is that a distinct possibility?
I'm not feeling that.
No? Okay.
No, I'm not feeling that. I honestly think that they're still in the center field market.
Okay.
I mean, I know that you've seen Dave talk up Adam Haseley lately.
Mm-hmm.
I that's not the way Dave Dombrowski does it. Mm-hmm. There's still enough free agent options out there, or even trade options, where I would really be shocked.
Yeah.
If Adam Haseley or Odubel Herrera trotted out there opening.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you that way because by putting him in there, I'm saying that they have to upgrade that position. So whether it comes from them going elsewhere or having the better player than what they have now, that's where I have Odubel in there. But I hear you.
Got to do better than that.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Jason, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on, and we'll await the results. Your prediction is no one gets in.
Yeah. Hey, I don't take any joy in that prediction, but that's the way I see it, pal.
All right, thanks, Jason.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.